Welcome to Plant Power. This is episode 4. Today, my co-host Megan will be talking with nutrition scientist Weston Bussler about phytonutrients and why it's important to consider the colors of food. Plus, after our discussion, we'll hear from practitioner Dave Hogshead, who is also passionate about nutritious crops and how their colors are indicative of their unique beneficial properties.
So in this episode today, I am joined with Dr. Weston Bussler, our expert in phytonutrients, along with Sarah and Kara, to really just dive into what are phytonutrients and how this whole color of food concept really applies. So I'm going to, go right to you, Weston, here for your expertise in defining exactly what are phytonutrients.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. Love coming on this podcast. So phytonutrients, that would be these plant-based compounds, that prefix phyto, that's almost always referring to a plant-derived material. And for a phytonutrient, that would be something that has this nutritional effect. But for the phytonutrients, oftentimes we're looking at them as these less essential, non-essential, so not necessarily things that aren't beneficial for you, but they're not going to be materials that without them, your body's going to clearly go into some sort of problematic state that is required for us to stay living. So that would be where you have all these essential macronutrients, vitamins, minerals that we know are vital to health and essential for our living. But these phytonutrients are things that there's so many different possible kinds of them that our body's very used to grabbing all different sorts of them and adapting, taking many different sources and different types of these phytonutrients and figuring out ways that they can use them for benefits. So oftentimes they're highly antioxidant compounds, or they have very anti-inflammatory properties, or they interact with us and our microbiomes are mediated through our microbiome. So they'll interact with those. And a lot of times have many different ways that they can impact health.
Right off the bat, I think Weston brings up two very important points when it comes to talking about phytonutrients. One, that they aren't essential like the micronutrients and macronutrients are. Micronutrients being vitamins and minerals, and macronutrients being protein, fat, and carbohydrates. And two, that there are so many types of phytonutrients for the body to choose from, so to speak. And reactions between these phytonutrients, the body, and the microbiome are very complex.
There's been a lot of research done on micronutrients and macronutrients, but only recently we've become enlightened to why phytonutrients are important to human health. With macronutrients and micronutrients, we've already made several leaps forward. With phytonutrients, we're just on the precipice.
Wow. Okay. So you hit so many of the key terms that I want to kind of use this time to really go through and define, because these are things that we are hearing so much more about each and every day. So we know the term phytonutrient, but you've thrown out other words like antioxidant and, other things that we're hearing in the phyto world is phytoactives or phytochemicals. Do these all play similar roles, or are there differences between these two that we need to distinguish?
Yeah. So we can go to the basis of certain things. So in plants, these secondary metabolites that are produced by these plants, oftentimes they're going to be things like signaling molecules for the plants that are able to elicit all sorts of functions for these plants themselves. There's many, many different kinds of metabolites in plants. Since they can't run away, they're stuck and they have to produce a myriad of different things that can help them survive. Differently from us as humans that are able to change our environments, or other animals for that matter, that they can change their environments and go find things like plants that are able to introduce a lot of these health beneficial metabolites. But these secondary metabolites, there's so many of them, and they're produced by the plants. But if you look at them, they are all chemicals and they're compounds. So they're in plants, they're compounds, therefore we can call them phytochemicals. These phytochemicals in plants, then they're able to perform functions in those plants, so they work in that manner. But when you take these materials, either as a single phytochemical isolated or groups of these phytochemicals altogether, and you display that when you deliver them to a new biological medium, so when you're ingesting them, when you're applying them to your skin, any of these sorts of things, they can be phytoactive to that portion. So they can actually have an efficacy point where they elicit some positive benefit for us, either, like I was saying, as an isolate or combined with all of the other different things in the plants. And this is where you start to get into some really complicated aspects that have been very difficult from a scientific perspective to be able to prove, talking about synergies of how these different plants together in their matrix wind up eliciting effects that are more powerful than just the single isolates alone. And you start to run into all sorts of different complicated complicated actions of them. Because of this, it's really difficult to research these different aspects, because from plants, like I was saying, there are so many of these different metabolites, and it's really difficult to figure out just how each one of these interacts with us because of all of the different ways that they can be mediated.
One way to think about the different terminology is this. When a plant compound is a secondary metabolite produced by a plant for some sort of protective reason, we can think of it as a phytochemical. And when we eat that plant, or apply part of the plant to our skin in some way, or otherwise isolate that phytochemical, we can then think of it as phytoactive. So in some ways, phytochemical is the noun and phytoactive is the verb or adjective.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're learning so much more too about all these different phytonutrients and how they can be, you know, very essential to our health, even though they are classified, quote unquote, as non-essential. So can you discuss a little bit about, you know, what they can do for our body and human health and how they are so important and what we need to be looking for here?
Yeah, sure. So some of the initial things that that you look at for a lot of these plant-based secondary metabolites, the phytochemicals, when they interact with us, they have a lot of fundamental properties. And for many of them, they can act as direct antioxidants, where they can help quench the production of these free radicals. And these free radicals are produced from all sorts of different biological functions. So the act of producing energy and all sorts of everyday biological actions within our body produce some free radicals that can be quenched by antioxidants. They also can interact with some of our inflammatory pathways. So through specific interactions with key enzyme pathways, one in particular you can think of is the NRF2 pathway that's involved in a lot of the inflammatory functions and the anti-inflammatory regulation. You see that a lot of these phytonutrients, when you look at them in animal or in vitro models, are really able to influence that pathway in a very powerful way to help mediate our body's response to all sorts of different stimuli.
What Weston is referencing regarding NRF2 is a regulator of cellular resistance to oxidation, a neutralizing pathway involved in oxidative stress that facilitates the body's natural mechanism to return to homeostasis, helping to protect against free radicals during cellular metabolism. To learn more about NRF2, we'll include some links to the research articles with further discussion.
But then there's going to be more and more different ways that these can interact. So in plants, for instance, you have all sorts of different classes of these. So you have the carotenoids, flavonoids, phenolic acids, lignans, and all sorts of different types that are able to interact in a bunch of different ways. A lot of these compounds have displayed some anti-cancer activities and the ability to influence the growth regulation and cell cycle arrest for these cancerous cells. And that all together, all of these different things overlapping with one another has been a lot of the theory as to why these diets that emphasize the delivery of a lot of these high phytonutrient containing foods wind up having better overall effects on our health span and overall mortality.
Absolutely. And I think you alluded to that a little bit before when you're talking about them being very synergistic and kind of working together within that kind of whole food matrix, because you've listed specific carotenoids or flavonoids, but you know, are they better when you have more of them, I would assume? So how do they kind of work together to really give the most bang for your buck, if you would?
There's not a really a good way to prove that. It's a difficult thing to study because of how hard it is to control all the different aspects that would be important there. But that's just nutrition as a field. And that's why it can be so frustrating as a field, because there are all of these contradictory concepts. Your body needs to be able to have an inflammatory response. That's important for all kinds of things. You don't want to shut that down. Your body needs the ability to have oxidation happen when it's necessary for the biological function that requires it. So you don't want to shut things down entirely. And there can be negative cases, but when you're looking at the benefits from phytonutrient containing foods, when you emphasize them as a collective, right now our best way of doing that is eating this diet that's a myriad of different colors and different types of foods, and foods that we know have these beneficial components. Oftentimes you'll hear this referred to as like eating superfoods. That's a really baseline common way of describing these. And these superfoods, they're not clearly defined what constitutes a superfood, but for the most part, you'll look at foods that have a high delivery of vitamins, minerals, and all these different essential components, along with a good amount of these phytonutrients. So being concentrated in the different types of phytochemicals, delivering a lot of them or a lot of different types of them.
Something Weston brought up just now is something that we talk about a lot on Holistic Matters, especially in the context of inflammation and oxidative stress. What I'm talking about is the idea that inflammation isn't always a bad thing that needs to be shut down. Similarly, oxidative stress is a normal mechanism that happens in the body. Instead of our aim being to indiscriminately shut down these processes or prevent them from happening altogether, the focus needs to instead be on managing them in a healthy way. Sarah, would you agree?
Yes, definitely. Inflammation and oxidative stress are both key mechanisms. We just need to make sure to keep them in check with a healthy diet.
So although there isn't necessarily an exact formula of you need to eat 10 carrots and 8 ounces of kale with 5 apple slices to resolve inflammation at the precise time and amount, there is a general approach of eating a variety of fruits and vegetables that differ in color and thus in phytonutrients. And that's what Weston was getting at right towards the end.
Weston, I think it's really interesting how, you know, you were talking about the secondary metabolites and how they're used to protect the plants, but then we find that they protect us. So they're protecting the plants against bugs, but then we've evolved to utilize those protections to protect us. What are some of those insights through the evolution to think about how that has happened?
Well, humans and plants have always evolved alongside each other and together. And you can start to really see our direct influence on the evolution of plants when you think about modern farming and cropping. Like this is where we've been selecting plants for particular needs that we have on a regular basis. So for these plants, a lot of these things that are important for us, say the energy content in a seed from a plant, this would just be baseline carbohydrates. In the plant, that's important for that seed to have all sorts of nutrients when it's planted that it can readily access and use to grow. But for us, having those large seeds with a lot of those carbohydrates have been really important for ensuring that there's enough calories for our survival and growth and development. So when we were selecting plants long times ago, when we're trying to look for ways that we can grow plants to feed our growing population in society, we were picking these ones that had these preferential traits for us. So part of this is how we evolved together with plants. But as far as some of the other things you're talking about, so how these plants ward off pests, for the plants here, a lot of these compounds, they do interact with some of these animals in ways that they can elicit a taste response in the pest that's chewing it. So if it's trying to prevent itself from being eaten and it delivers a very bitter or pungent flavor, that can ward off a lot of pests or even consumption by different things, allowing that plant the ability to have time to be able to reproduce and grow and reproduce and grow. So ultimately, there's a lot of different reasons that these plants are developing all these different metabolites. Another thing when we talk about a lot of these color pigments and the antioxidants is they're just being beamed on by the sun constantly. So a lot of times they'll develop these pathways to be able to deal with that excessive amount of sunlight that they're trying to use and channel that into all sorts of the biological functions for the plant.
So plants produce phytochemicals as a defense mechanism from threats like the sun and animals who might want to eat them. But humans are part of that evolutionary threat for plants, and the phytochemicals they produce to protect themselves actually end up being phytoactive compounds that benefit human health. Isn't that ironic how that relationship evolved?
Oftentimes, when we are able to grow based off these plants, we preferentially select those plants to continue growing in a manner that we'll see more and more and more of them. We're at this point now in history where we're just very, very good at plant selection, plant breeding, to the point where we've found things that work so perfectly for us that they, in certain functions, that we've kind of forgotten about a lot of those initial things that the plants delivered, that eating that really vast diet was delivering for us. But as we move more to that monocropping and continuously using the same plants, we're putting ourselves at a little bit more risk of not getting as much of these potentially beneficial things that we used to get alongside when we were selecting more to deliver the same thing.
So do you all think we've become too good at plant selection and plant breeding?
You know, we're understanding more about plants that we've utilized over a long periods of time. Breeding out things like sulfur-containing compounds in broccoli has left them with less nutrients, but has changed their flavor. So no, I don't think we have become too good at it. We're just now starting to understand the fuller picture of what type of plants we really want to grow and what qualities we would like to promote in those plants. We may be too good at understanding taste factors, but not yet good enough at understanding the nutritive factors.
So what are some of those health benefits that we are reaping from these plants? Do you have any specific examples that you have in regards to, you know, what they can do for us and how they are so beneficial?
Well, I mean, that's just like an overall nutrition question, right?
Right.
Basically, like, these plants can deliver all the necessary vitamins, minerals, and macronutrients that we need in our diet dearly for our own ability to survive and thrive on a daily basis. But I think you're more referring to some of the phytonutrient examples.
Right. Like, we have done this series, the Color Food series, for example, on Holistic Matters, where we really kind of dove into understanding what the GAEs and polyphenols and phenolic compounds are of certain crops, like you've mentioned. And those are also added to that whole terminology bucket where we're trying to understand exactly what those things are and what they mean and why we should care about them. So I don't know if you wanted to go through maybe a specific example with one of the crops that you are most favorited and discuss kind of what are those compounds that really make it up and why it's beneficial.
Yeah. Okay. So it's almost every plant has a certain amount of phytonutrients, but some of the really well-studied and well-characterized ones are the most prominent types, such as carotenoids and flavonoids. You can even look at something as simple as lettuce. So this would be something that we consume on a really regular basis. It grows really easily. You don't think about it too much as a nutrient powerhouse or delivering all kinds of things, but something like lettuce will even contain, it'll contain an adequate amount of carotenoids. So you're going to have in these lettuces, if you're looking at like romaine lettuce, for instance, like beta carotene, lutein, zeaxanthin, these different carotenoids that are really important antioxidants in our bodies for many different uses. But oftentimes you think of them for things like eye health and development of that and protection of eyesight. But you also have within these plants a certain amount of phenolic acids. So things like caffeoquinic acid that are a small phenolic compound that elicits some effects via interacting with the microbiome, directly being uptaken in our bloodstream and being metabolized by us and stimulating a lot of these positive immune benefits that you get from it. But you also see things like quercetin to a small amount in there. And quercetin is a flavonoid. And quercetin has been outlined in a number of different physiological functions in the body. And this is actually where you start getting into when it's been looked at in isolation. Quercetin has been shown to be able to influence everything from just all sorts of non-communicable disease-related effects, so trying to reduce this chronic inflammation, but also in certain things like athletic performance and recovery for our muscles. You can look at something like quercetin and how it's been implicated in being able to stimulate mitochondrial effects in the muscle cells, so being able to affect function and recovery in individuals that are using it for training aspects. So something like lettuce contains all these materials, but when you're looking at just that in an isolate, it's going to be really tough to deliver or to know if we're delivering enough via just that, when in actuality, you can find something, a different plant that contains far more of it on a concentration basis, like an onion is known to deliver really high amounts of quercetin. Another example of something would be a grain like buckwheat. The buckwheat grain is really unique when it comes to other cereal grains. Since it's a pseudo-cereal, it's not actually from the same grass species that most all of the other cereal grains are. That is one of the reasons that it has this really high amount of quercetin in comparison to the other comparables. But why that's really important is you can actually eat quite a bit of a concentration basis of something like buckwheat or something like onions and deliver a lot of this metabolite quercetin that we know has some of these beneficial effects. And it can be utilized in all different sorts of situations.
So can I make a clarification real quick, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong? So something like lettuce, I thought that was a really interesting example, just because I wouldn't think that most people would think of lettuce as a nutrient or phytonutrient powerhouse. But what you're trying to say is that plants have a wide variety of these phytonutrients in them. Just some, like buckwheat or onions, are maybe known for having higher concentrations of certain phytonutrients.
Yeah, definitely. Certain ones have like a superstar nutrient for each of them. And that would be like one of the other aspects. But when you look at all of the different kinds of plants and plant types that you can be delivering to people on a regular basis, it's really important for us at the moment to be recommending that variety, because we've seen benefits to people having those varieties. We don't know a special recipe that's going to lead to the healthiest overall diet. And that's been one of the issues, is over years and years, we've continuously tried to find the perfect diet for every individual person. And it just doesn't seem to necessarily be something that we can achieve at this point, since individuals have varying responses and needs. And looking at the wide variety of things that we can deliver, it's a really important way to cover a lot of our bases and deliver things. So you might not think of something like lettuce as a particularly nutrient dense or phytonutrient dense material, but you are delivering it at pretty adequate amounts. You can eat a lot of it. Certain aspects, it is actually pretty high in. One can look at natural folate, the natural folate that's found in plants versus the folate types. When you're fortifying folic acid in foods, you're delivering these different methylated or formal folates that are able to be incorporated directly into some people in a form that our body's more used to recognizing and being able to utilize differently or at different points in the uptake pathway. But there's going to be other dark leafy greens that are delivering different things from lettuce. So, I mean, you have something like parsley is a relative dark leafy plant. But in parsley, you're delivering completely different types of flavonoids. You have apigenin or at a really concentrated amount. You have a high amount of these furanocoumarins that we often look at as a phytonutrient type that's in something like grapefruit. And when you look at something like grapefruit, these phytonutrients are, they have in grapefruit shown the ability to interact with a lot of the medications that are being used on a regular basis with people. So in the food, at least with something like parsley, they're at a far lower concentration and probably wouldn't be consumed at the amounts that could elicit that interaction. But with each of these, you're delivering all sorts of different things. So like another type of leafy green that you can look at is just like a collard green. And a collard green compares to romaine lettuce in a pretty unique, uniquely concentrated total phenolic amount. One of the things that Megan mentioned earlier, she was talking about gallic acid equivalents. And gallic acid equivalents, it's a that's a term for total phenolics. It's a type of measure that is used on the analytical side. So when we're trying to figure out how much of the different types of phenolics are in a plant, it's really difficult to go in there with a machine and know every single possible type of phenolic compound, since there are so very many in the plants, and they can range from the aromatic amino acids all the way to these polyphenols that are in plants, these long chains of phenolics that have some sort of health benefit. But you use something like this gallic acid equivalence to kind of capture that variation and showcase just the total expression of these phenolic type molecules. And you standardize it to something that is a simple phenolic. And gallic acid is one of the most simple phenolics that there is. And you can say, okay, there's a general total level of phenolics in that plant that in something like collards, it's about 10x what you see in something like romaine lettuce. So you can get benefits out of it, out of looking at it that way. And that's where you can say, okay, that collard green, while the romaine lettuce has 20 more different types, hypothetically, it may not have the same level of concentration, which in collard greens we know has a much more concentrated total phenolic delivery.
So Weston, it's interesting when you were talking about lettuce, I heard you mention beta carotene, which myself and maybe others who are listening often associate with orange, like in carrots, beta carotene in carrots. Do you feel like it's pretty common that you see different phytonutrients like beta carotene associated with certain colors? And
yeah, so with all of the different plants and the plant colors, they have this primary visual color that you can see that's so prominent, and that's really important for when you're trying to do things like eating the rainbow to promote your health. But there are all of these different phytochemicals in the plants, and many of those phytochemicals themselves are associated with a particular color. So beta carotene orange. That's the baseline association. When you isolate beta carotene, you have a really yellow orange pigment to it. But you can start to see a lot of these different phytonutrients within different plants that don't necessarily have that color as their primary color that you can see outright. So in something like lettuce, we'll talk about dark green lettuce because there's different kinds of lettuce too. But in that dark green lettuce, that prominent color, a lot of it would be coming from the chlorophyll in the plant, but it does contain still this beta carotene just in a way that's not driving that primary color, either by enough amount of it or there's something that's just overpowering in the visual aspect to it. But you can actually, within each plant, you can really associate the different phytonutrients to a particular color group. So when you look at a lot of these plants in particular, you're like, oh, it has yellow orange coloring, it has bright red coloring, it has phytonutrients that you normally associate with white fleshed plants. So if it has like something like a tomato, tomatoes have quercetin in it, and quercetin you primarily think of in these in onions and apples, these things that have this white flesh to them, but it's also going to be found in something like a tomato that has this really dark red. But even within that tomato, there's going to be like some different colors within it. So you have some of the internal flesh is differently colored. So yeah, there's the primary colors that you would associate things to, but these plants themselves, they're not that simple. And for that purpose, it is really smart to look at these phytonutrients as having color associations beyond what you see in just that primary color thing of the plant, the primary color. But the primary color of the plant is a really important visual tool when it comes to the general consumer, where you can say, all right, you're covering a lot of your bases with the different types of phytonutrients.
Before we move on to the next part of the interview, I want to clarify what Weston means by total phenolics and gallic acid equivalents. Megan, could you talk a little bit about how we use gallic acid equivalents in the Color of Food series on Holistic Matters?
So gallic acid equivalents, or GAEs, are one way to help us understand that all colors are valuable when it comes to plants, specifically by quantifying total phenolics, which are a group of phytonutrients that include phenolic acids, flavonoids, and condensed tannins, for example. So phenolics are universally present in plant-derived foods and have been long linked to the health properties of a plant-based diet. So scientists are using GAEs to quantify those total phenolics, and it helps us differentiate between different plants. So when we're measuring GAEs, we are essentially comparing the amounts of phytonutrients in the total phenolic compound content in different foods. And we do go through this in the Color of Food booklets that you can find on Holistic Matters, in particular the fruit and vegetable booklet.
Hey, one thing that I think is interesting is, you know, when we look at juicing, right, and removing the fiber, like what does that do to some of these concentrations, and why would that be beneficial, you know, as we're thinking of superfoods?
Oh, I mean, juicing can really concentrate some things and it can remove other things. It's And then you can even dry down the juices and concentrate things even further. It's basically, when you juice something, you are doing a very crude extraction of the plant. You're extracting the portion that can be physically removed from the plants. Oftentimes when you're juicing a lot of these plants, they're over 90% of the plant is water. And then within that, you have a certain amount that's water soluble. When you're juicing it, you're completely disrupting and destroying the physical matrix that a lot of these plants have in them. And all of those water soluble portions and whatever can be removed via that process, it winds up in a different proportion than what you see in the plant itself. So you could be extracting a lot of those sugars, a lot of the B vitamins, some of the pigments are really easily extracted via squeezing and juicing. But when it really comes down to it, you have to look at each plant individually. And this is why it's really important that groups that are touting the benefits of those juices and stuff, they know a lot of what they are delivering. This is a really important thing, because those juices could be concentrating a lot of these health beneficial components, but they could be leaving behind a lot of things. So most notably, you'd be leaving behind a lot of these plant cell wall fibers. And a lot of the things that make up the plant cell wall, those aren't going through because they're not water soluble in the form that they are. So you have this leftover portion of the plant and the juiced portion of what you created. So it's going to be plant dependent, but you're able to concentrate a lot of particular metabolites by doing that.
So it sounds like to me you're making a pretty good case for the idea of eat the rainbow, just because for the average person trying to navigate the health benefits associated with plant-based food, it's much easier to explain the concept of eat the rainbow as far as eating a variety of differently colored foods than it is to say, well, buckwheat has lutein and lettuce has beta carotene, and, you know, and trying to fill out this spreadsheet of all the different phytonutrients that you need to get, not to mention, you know, getting the right amount of protein and vitamins. And there's so many things to consider. So that being said, can we talk about like how important the idea of eat the rainbow is? And I know we hear it everywhere, especially in the nutrition community, but I don't want to see it go cliche because it's just so important.
Well, I mean, absolutely. There's a lot of benefits that you get from trying to actually have a colorful plate on a day-to-day basis. You deliver a lot of things that you kind of see a lot of these different plants that are similar colors deliver a lot of similar metabolites and types of metabolites. So I was talking about a lot of dark leafy greens. Dark leafy greens, you're most associating with the folate concentration, vitamin K, lutein, zeaxanthin, and then a range of different phenolic compounds. But you start to look at like reds, for instance, and reds, you start delivering a lot of different types of carotenoids in them. And so you're starting to get more of this lycopene, beta carotene mixed together in favor of a lot of the like lutein, zeaxanthin delivery of the dark leafy greens. But then you're also going to start seeing a different proportion of other types of phytonutrients. So as well, you start to see differences in the vitamins and minerals. So you in something like tomatoes and red peppers, red bell peppers, you see that those two are really concentrated sources of vitamin C. They also are delivering a lot of different types of minerals at a high level than what you get in a lot of those dark leafy plants. Then you can see different phenolics like the lignans and things will start to really show up in those groups. Then again, those also can be found in the greens. And then I was talking about beta carotene. Beta carotene is found in the oranges. So you can look at things like carrots. But when you look at even within carrots, you can start to see this rainbow variation. You can have purple carrots, and those purple carrots are delivering a different pigment. They're delivering anthocyanins, and these anthocyanins have shown the effects on cognition and brain health that maybe aren't being delivered from some of these other things. So you tack in all these different types, and you're covering such a good basis when you do that, that one of the things we see in a lot of these diets in individuals that are healthy is that collective different type of variety. And they're finding the varieties via different methods and different original sources, but you can really start to get them once you combine everything together in a really smart way. But you look across the world and all of these different places, people have figured out how to survive. And so often it comes from finding a specific variety of foods that they're able to use to deliver all of the necessary health benefits that they need. So there's no one answer to it. And that's why the broad answer of eating the rainbow winds up being the best one that we can give.
I was also thinking too, like when you were talking about the evolution of the relationship between humans and plants, it really only makes sense that the answer to a healthy diet isn't going to be a simple solution. It's going to be a more complex answer as far as what kinds of plants have different nutrients and what kind of nutrients does this specific person need. Millions of years of relationships growing and changing, you know, it's never going to be simple. But I always like to say that the good news is something that will always remain the same is that plants are good for you. So that's not going to change. So I want to go back to more towards the beginning when we were talking about phytoactives and chemicals and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, Weston, would you say that the three terms, phytonutrient, phytoactive, and phytochemical, are essentially interchangeable?
No, they're not quite interchangeable. They're very similar. So the phytonutrient phytochemical one, that's probably the closest. But for the phytoactive, I mean, a phytoactive could be really a positive or a negative thing, right? So you could look at a phytoactive that is able to, it's a plant material that's active in some form, and that could be positive, negative. The phytonutrient, you're really looking at nutritional aspects. How does it impact metabolism? And a lot of these nutritional effects for our health, not necessarily some of these other ones. So for instance, I wouldn't necessarily say that a phytonutrient is always going to be the same as something that has more of just like a phytoactive type thing. And mm-hmm. phytonutrient is also something that would be a singular as a phytochemical, but a phytochemical isn't always going to be phytoactive or act as a phytonutrient. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they do get referred to in similar ways and they can be interchangeable depending on how you're using it. So there is an understandable confusion between all of them.
Yeah. So let me ask this, and this could be a question for, I think, Megan, Sarah, or Weston. For the average nutrition enthusiast, we'll say, who's wanting to learn more about the beneficial components of plants, how would you encourage them to understand when they hear these three different terms? Like, what would you encourage them to focus on, or how would you help them understand like what's the most important to not get bogged down in the small nuances of the definitions?
I think that there's a lot of small nuances, right, between phytonutrient and phytochemical, phytoactive. But to kind of the naive individual, like, they're slightly interchangeable. You want to focus on, like, I think what Weston was saying earlier about eating the rainbow and what that effect has on the body versus like the nuances of those terms. You know, phytochemical could, as Weston said earlier, phytochemicals could be negatives too. You know, there are things that are in plants that have maybe a negative effect or a negative effect on one individual, right? So you have to really like understand your own body and what the needs are and how, what you're trying to do. So maybe you have a history of kidney stones, and so you don't want to eat spinach because of the oxalates. And so that might be a specific phytonutrient in the plant that doesn't work for you as an individual. So you got to kind of know what you're trying to get at and mm-hmm. what those phytonutrients, phytochemicals in those plants help you achieve.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, like, the practicality too of doing this day in and day out, because a lot of times whenever we hear a lot of science and nutrition in itself can be super overwhelming, we tend to either do it all or not want to do anything, but just truly introducing, you know, very rich fruits and vegetables and whole grains into our diet each and every day in whatever amounts is really going to, you know, add up and be beneficial to your health over time. So I think, you know, as Sarah mentioned, finding what's working for your body and not comparing it to everything else that you're seeing on the internet or what's this, you know, picture perfect diet that will change your life. really you have to go into the practicality mode of how can you make this something that is a long-term solution rather than just a short fix. Because what we do know hasn't changed is that the more fruits and vegetables we can get in each and every day, the better off we're going to have, you know, better quality of life and longevity. So I think that's something we really need to keep in mind. So, you know, I do encourage people to eat the rainbow as much as they can. And it's not just, you know, for children, but adults, anybody can really, you know, use that phrase and make it really practical in their life.
Well, and even consuming one extra vegetable a day, I mean, there's good data out there showing, you know, small incremental changes can help you to then have a more positive health outcome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're not saying go out today and have 10 cups of blueberries, but, you know, just gradually increasing. Yeah, it does make a huge difference. Well, this has certainly been very insightful into the whole world of phytonutrients. So we really appreciate your time, Dr. Bussler and Sarah and Kara. So thank you all for joining us today. And Dave Hogshead, Dr. Dave Hogshead is here to give us some more clinical insights within this topic. So Dave, we'll turn it over to you.
Hi, everyone. Dave Hogshead here again, and I hope you enjoyed that podcast about one of the most overlooked gaps in the American diet, phytonutrients. Everyone knows you need your vitamins. Everyone knows you need your minerals, but the unique phytochemicals in plants are just finally starting to get the respect they deserve. And even though they're not technically essential nutrients, I believe many of these phytonutrients can be thought of as essential for thriving in today's very stressful and toxic world. And I love how this podcast highlighted how often the color of the plant directly relates to the unique phytonutrient benefits of that plant. I heard someone say it so well a few years ago. We don't just have big nutritional deficiencies in our modern diet. We have major color deficiencies in our modern diet. Now, the definitive resource for learning about all of these phytochemicals, these phytonutrients, and their benefits from the different colors in food is going to be found at holisticmatters.com. The Color of Food project they did was really so amazing at giving us a deeper appreciation of these superfood benefits. So if you haven't seen that, it's a must. But I thought it'd be helpful to just take a few minutes and do an overview of the major food colors we all need to pay attention to in our diet for optimal health and how these foods concentrated into supplement form are so powerful in the clinical setting. So Weston mentioned the color green in plants that is so vital for health from both an essential nutrient standpoint and from a phytonutrient standpoint. From the essential nutrient standpoint that more people are familiar with, we depend on green vegetables for so many minerals, especially magnesium and potassium. It's very hard to get enough of those minerals in the modern diet, and we need the green leafy vegetables to provide optimal levels of them. Those vegetables are also the best sources of folate and vitamin K, and we're just learning more and more about how important those nutrients are for optimal health. From a phytonutrient standpoint perspective, Wesson mentioned how lutein and zeaxanthin are commonly found in green plants. And again, we're just starting to realize how critical those phytonutrients are to protect the eye. And the most well-known phytonutrient in green plants is chlorophyll, the blood of plants that's responsible for its green color. That plant blood chlorophyll is very similar to the molecular structure of our hemoglobin in our blood. So it's always been important in human health to get enough chlorophyll to support healthy blood. Chlorophyll is also very soothing and healing to the digestive tract. So you can almost think of chlorophyll as nature's band-aid for inflamed and irritated gastrointestinal tissue. And it's also been used for healing of burns topically on the skin. So there are a lot of really great applications for using concentrated chlorophyll-based supplements in your practice. But I think what chlorophyll is probably more important for than ever before in human history is to support detoxification and cellular protection. We're exposed to thousands of toxic chemicals in our food, water, air, furniture, carpet, cosmetics. You can go on and on. And yeah, there's lots of herbs that support detoxification. They're all great. But chlorophyll is such a simple and fundamental phytonutrient that can be found in so many green vegetables. But the bad news, we just don't eat nearly enough green vegetables in this country to get those kinds of benefits. Research shows that about 80% of Americans don't eat enough green vegetables. That's a big dietary gap. And for many people, it's not that they don't like green vegetables. It's that we're so rushed, we don't take the time to prepare them. Or in my case, just too lazy to. So green is one of those colors most people need to supplement in their diet. And some of my favorite green superfoods to use in supplements for myself and my patients include alfalfa. Alfalfa is a great source of chlorophyll and trace minerals. Another one of my favorite greens that is so underused in the natural health world is buckwheat, especially buckwheat leaf. Buckwheat is really emerging as one of those top phytonutrient superstars loaded with polyphenols and other phytonutrients that provide amazing benefits. The phytonutrient that buckwheat is most well known for is rutin. Again, rutin is something that's not classified as an essential nutrient, but in our modern world, and especially with our modern diet, and especially with metabolic syndrome, pre-diabetic issues being so common, it's a polyphenol that I think could be considered as an essential phytochemical. And one of the first benefits of rutin is it's a powerful tool for promoting a healthy inflammation response. So most people out there know how beneficial nutritional therapies like fish oil and turmeric are, you know, for controlling that inflammation response in the body. Things like Boswellia, frankincense as well. But rutin doesn't get the respect it deserves for that, or at least until recently it's not. But that rutin from buckwheat is an inflammation modulating superstar in its own right, and especially for cardiovascular inflammation. And rutin has multiple cardiovascular and metabolic benefits in addition to controlling inflammation. It strengthens the endothelial lining of your vascular system. It supports healthy glucose levels. It helps minimize the oxidation of LDL cholesterol so that LDL cholesterol is less likely to damage your vascular system. It's just an amazing multi-purpose cardiovascular supporting polyphenol. And that's just one phytonutrient in buckwheat. You could talk about the carotenoid antioxidants like lutein and zeaxanthin for ocular health. But there's another very important color and group of phytochemicals for the eyes that we can get from the whole buckwheat plant. And that's the purple stems from buckwheat. Those provide anthocyanidins that are very unique to the color purple. Now that name may sound familiar to you because you've probably heard about the benefits of blueberries and bilberries, which are mainly the anthocyanidin content. So most people, again, know about blueberries. A lot of people know about bilberries, but people don't realize that that stem, that purple stem from the buckwheat, provides a lot of those same benefits as blueberries and bilberries. It's just, again, such a multi-purpose superfood. Those anthocyanidins help eye health, brain health, circulation, and they help modulate inflammation just like the rutin. And purple might be one of our greatest color deficiencies in the modern diet. So whole buckwheat extract supplements are a great way to compensate for that color gap of purple. Buckwheat is just such a multi-purpose phytochemical superstar, but you could also talk about the essential nutrient benefits of buckwheat. There's a lot in there that we don't typically get enough of in the American diet. And one of the biggest ones is magnesium, especially in the buckwheat leaf. It's a phenomenal source of multi-forms of magnesium, not just one form. It's just one of the most multi-purpose superfoods you can find, but the reality is most people won't eat it. So it's one of those foods that's so important to supplement. I literally give buckwheat supplements to every single one of my patients, and it does a lot for their overall health picture. And there's other green superstars we could talk about, like kale, Brussels sprouts, barley grass, and they all have their own unique benefits. But the bottom line is, most of us can benefit from more green and to supplement some green in our diet. And most people intuitively know that they're not getting enough green. But another important and overlooked color in food that provides very unique phytonutrients is black phytonutrients. And these include tannins, saponins, and phytocannabinoids. So black beans, black-eyed peas, hemp for the phytocannabinoids. But probably my favorite way to supplement black phytonutrients in the diet is with Spanish black radish as a supplement. This is a great cruciferous vegetable for detoxification support. Again, we need more detoxification support than ever before. But unlike the green cruciferous vegetables, you know, kale, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, the black tannins and saponins in Spanish black radish have some really unique antimicrobial benefits for digestive tract health. So I believe Spanish black radish is the cruciferous vegetable with the most multi-purpose clinical benefits. But again, this is not a food most people are going to eat, and that's why we supplement it. It's got a very strong taste, a lot of sulfur, that's what makes it so effective, and bitter compounds. So I use a lot of Spanish black radish-based supplements in my practice. Now, a pretty easy color group of phytochemicals for most people to get in their diet would be yellow and orange, because there are so many options of these foods to choose from for our beta carotene and other unique phytonutrients. We've got carrots, sweet potatoes, squash, and then fruits like oranges, lemons, pineapple. So a lot of great tasting ways to get these colors. But a very unique yellow compound everyone should include in their diet or supplement with are the yellow curcuminoids in turmeric. Curcuminoids are probably the most researched phytochemical out there. And of course, they're most popular for inflammation support, but they also support cardiovascular health, brain health, digestive tract support, just cellular protection benefits throughout the entire body. So again, curcuminoids technically are not an essential nutrient, but with all the toxins we're exposed to, the stress our bodies are under, the inflammation challenges, the metabolic challenges that we have today, they really can be thought of as an essential phytochemical to thrive in today's world. Another color phytochemical group that should be fairly easy to get is red. Red phytonutrients provide some great antioxidant benefits and cardiovascular support through multiple mechanisms. And a lot of the red foods are some of our best vitamin C sources as well, like strawberries and peppers. We've got tomatoes, of course, for the lycopene, prostate benefits. But when we're talking about the ultimate superfoods for these color groups, we probably have to give the prize to beets. You talk about a 21st century superfood, almost everybody could benefit from beetroot. The nitrates in beets support circulation through nitric oxide in the body. You know, so many people take supplements just to support that one pathway, and it's just a bonus benefit of getting red beets. Beets also support liver and gallbladder health, cholesterol metabolism, and a big issue today, methylation support. So it's a very important food for people with high homocysteines. Beets are definitely another take it or eat it food. You either have to eat it in your diet or take some type of beetroot supplement. Now, the color white in foods provides unique flavanols and phenolic acids that provide another layer of powerful antioxidant and vascular protection. And we can easily get white phytonutrients from apples. There's also white and buckwheat seed, oats, onions, and probably the most popular white phytonutrient food to supplement or eat is garlic. The unique phytochemical from garlic is allicin, and it provides so many immune and cardiovascular benefits. Garlic could probably be considered another take it or eat it food. It has so many multi-purpose benefits in the body. We really need to either put an emphasis on eating it or taking it in a concentrated supplement form. And finally, we've got a color that may seem drab and dull, but it's very important, and that's brown. Brown foods are where we get a lot of gut microbiome support with lignans and fiber that feed our beneficial bacteria. But one of the most important phytonutrients that we find in brown foods are beta-glucans. Oats and mushrooms are both great beta-glucan sources. And both of these foods are finally starting to get the respect they deserve. Oats are getting a lot of new attention and research for cholesterol and blood sugar regulation support. And the mushroom beta-glucan sources are gaining a newfound appreciation and popularity for their powerful immune-supporting benefits. Mushrooms also have historically been used as stress adaptogens. So most of you are familiar with that concept. It's any plant based compound that helps your body adapt to stress. Mushrooms are great for both immune and stress management support. And mushrooms like reishi shiitake make very effective immune supporting supplements. So definitely mushrooms are a take it or eat it food in today's world. So remember, your patients don't just have a lot of nutrient deficiencies. Most of them have a lot of phytochemical color deficiencies in their diet. green, black, red, orange, yellow, purple, white, and brown. It sounds so simple that colors can make that big of a difference in health. But without a broad variety of color in the diet, we can't get all the diverse phytochemicals that we're just scratching the surface to learn how many ways these phytochemicals protect our bodies and enhance our health. And the beautiful thing with modern technology today, again, is if you're not going to eat all these colors, if you have a hard time getting all these in our busy, hectic lifestyle, you can usually obtain them in concentrated food or herbal supplements. So again, remember to check out all of the color of food resources that are available at holisticmatters.com. Thanks to everybody put this podcast together, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you to both Weston and Dave for painting such a clear picture of why phytonutrients and the colors of food are important and relevant for human health. Learn more on holisticmatters.com with the Color of Food series, which has a variety of downloadable pamphlets and booklets available for you. That's Holistic with a W.